She just wants her ladies to fuss over her so she can feel even more important. This is the biggest event of the season. She wouldn't miss it for the world. The biggest event of the season. I let out a shaky breath. Nervous? Asked Jenya. A little. I don't know why. Maybe because a few hundred nobles are waiting to get their first look at you. Thanks. That really helps. You're very welcome, she said, giving my hair a hard tug. You should be used to being gawked at by now. And yet I'm not. Well, if it gets too bad, give me a signal, and I'll get up on the banquet table, toss my skirt over my head, and do a little dance. That way no one will be looking at you. I laughed and felt myself relax a bit. After a moment, trying to keep my voice casual, I asked, "Has the Darkling arrived?" "Oh, yes. He arrived yesterday. I saw his coach." My heart sank a little. He had been in the palace for an entire day, and he hadn't come to see me or called for me. "I imagine he's very busy," said Jenya. "Of course." After a moment, she said softly, "We all feel it, you know."
"Feel what?"
"The pull toward the Darkling. But he's not like us, Alina." I tensed. Jenya kept her gaze studiously focused on the coils of my hair.
"What do you mean?"
I asked. Even to my own ears, my voice sounded unnaturally high. "His kind of power. The way he looks. You'd have to be mad or blind not to notice it." I didn't want to ask, but I couldn't help myself.
"Has he ever? I mean, have you and he ever?"
"No, never." A mischievous smile twitched on her lips. "But I would."
"Really?
Who wouldn't?" Her eyes met mine in the mirror. "But I'd never let my heart get involved." I gave what I hoped was an indifferent shrug.
"Of course not."
Jenya raised her flawless brows and tugged hard on my hair.
"Ouch!"
I yelped.
"Will David be there tonight?"
Jenya sighed. "No, he doesn't like parties. But I did just happen to drop by the workrooms so he could get a peek at what he was missing. He barely looked at me."
"I doubt that," I said comfortingly.
Jenya twisted a final piece of my hair into place and secured it with a golden hairpin. "There," she said triumphantly. She handed me my little mirror and turned me around so that I could see her handiwork. Jenya had piled half of my hair into an elaborate knot, the rest cascaded around my shoulders in shining waves. I beamed and gave her a quick hug.
"Thank you,"
I said.
"You're spectacular."
"A lot of good it does me," she grumbled. How was it that Jenya had fallen so hard for someone so serious and so quiet and so seemingly oblivious to her gorgeousness? Or was that exactly why she had fallen for David? A knock at the door pulled me from my thoughts. I practically ran to open it. I felt a rush of relief when I saw two servants standing in the doorway, each carrying several boxes. Until that moment, I hadn't realized how worried I was about my Kefta arriving. I laid the largest box on the bed and pulled off the lid. Jenya squeaked, and I just stood there gaping at the contents. When I didn't move, she reached into the box and pulled out yards of rippling black silk. The sleeves and neckline were delicately embroidered in gold and glittered with tiny jet beads. "Black," Jenya whispered. "His color. What did it mean?"
"Look,"
she gasped. The neckline of the gown was laced with a black velvet ribbon, and from it hung a small golden charm, the sun in eclipse, the Darkling's symbol. I bit my lip. This time the Darkling had chosen to set me apart, and there was nothing I could do about it. I felt a little jab of resentment, but it was drowned by excitement. Had he chosen these colors for me before or after the night by the lake? Would he regret seeing me in them tonight?
I couldn't think about that now. Unless I wanted to go to the ball naked, I didn't have a lot of options. I stepped behind the screen and slipped into the new kefta. The silk felt cool on my skin as I fumbled with the tiny buttons. When I emerged, Jenya broke into a huge grin.
"Ooh, I knew you'd look good in black," she grabbed my arm.
"Come on. I don't even have my shoes on.
Just come on."
She pulled me down the hall, then threw open a door without knocking. Zoya shrieked. She was standing in the middle of her room in a kefta of midnight blue silk, a brush in her hand.
"Excuse us," announced Jenya. "But we have need of this chamber. Darkling's orders."
Zoya's beautiful blue eyes lit it dangerously.
"If you think," she began.
And then she caught sight of me. Her jaw dropped, and the blood drained from her face.
"Out," commanded Jenya.
Zoya snapped her mouth shut, but to my amazement, she left the room without another word. Jenya slammed the door behind her.
"What are you doing?" I asked dubiously.
"I thought it was important that you see yourself in a proper mirror, not that useless sliver of glass on your dressing table," she said.
"But mostly, I wanted to see the look on that bitch's face when she saw you in the Darkling's color."
I couldn't restrain my grin. "That was pretty wonderful."
"Wasn't it?"
Jenya said dreamily. I turned to the mirror, but Jenya grabbed me and sat me down at Zoya's dressing table. She started rooting around in the drawers.
"Jenya!"
"Just wait.
Aha. I knew she was darkening her lashes."
Jenya pulled a little pot of black antimony from Zoya's drawer.
"Can you summon a little light for me to work with?"
I called a nice warm glow to help Jenya see better and tried to be patient as she made me look up, down, left, right.
"Perfect," she said when she was done. "Oh, Alina, you look like quite the temptress."
"Right," I said, and snatched the mirror from her. But then I had to smile. That sad, sickly girl with hollowed-out cheeks and bony shoulders was gone. In her place was a Grisha with sparkling eyes and shimmering waves of bronze hair. The black silk clung to my new form, shifting and sliding like sewn-together shadows. And Jenya had done something marvelous to my eyes, so that they looked dark and almost cat-like.
"Jewelry!"
shouted Jenya, and we ran back to my room, passing Zoya seething in the hallway.
"Are you done?"
she snapped.
"For the moment," I said airily,
and Jenya gave a very unladylike snort. In the other boxes on my bed, we found golden silk slippers, glittering jet and gold earrings, and a thick fur muff. When I was ready, I examined myself in the little mirror above the basin. I felt exotic and mysterious, like I was wearing some other, far more glamorous girl's clothes. I looked up to see Jenya watching me with a troubled expression.
"What's wrong?"
I said, suddenly self-conscious again.
"Nothing," she said with a smile. "You look beautiful, truly. But..."
Her smile faltered. She reached out and lifted the golden charm at my neckline.
"Alina, the Darkling doesn't notice most of us. We're moments he'll forget in his long life, and I'm not sure that's such a bad thing. Just be careful."
I stared at her, baffled. "Of what?"
"Of powerful men."
"Jenya?" I asked before I could lose my nerve. "What happened between you and the king?" She examined the toes of her satin slippers.
"The king has his way with lots of servants," she said. Then she shrugged. "At least I got a few jewels out of it."
"You don't mean that."
"No, I don't."
She fiddled with one of her earrings.
"The worst part is that everyone knows."
I put my arm around her. "They don't matter. You're worth all of them put together." She gave a weak imitation of her confident smile.
"Oh, I know that."
"The Darkling should have done something," I said. "He should have protected you.
He has, Alina. More than you know. Besides, he's as much a slave to the whims of the king as the rest of us. At least for now.
For now?
She gave me a quick squeeze.
Let's not dwell on depressing things tonight.
Come on, she said, her gorgeous face breaking into a dazzling grin.
I'm in desperate need of champagne.
And with that, she glided serenely from the room. I wanted to say more to her. I wanted to ask her what she meant about the Darkling. I wanted to take a hammer to the king's head. But she was right. There would be plenty of time for trouble tomorrow. I took a last peek in the little mirror and hurried out into the hall, leaving my worries and Jenya's warnings behind me. My black kefta caused quite a stir in the domed hall as Marie and Nadia and a group of the other Ethereal-Kai, dressed in blue velvets and silks, swarmed around me and Jenya. Jenya made to slip away as she usually did, but I held fast to her arm. If I was wearing the Darkling's color, then I intended to take full advantage of it and have my friend by my side.
You know I can't go into the ballroom with you. The queen would have a fit, she whispered in my ear.
Okay, but you can still walk over with me. Jenya beamed. As we walked down the gravel path and into the wooded tunnel, I noticed that Sergei and several other Heartrenders were keeping pace with us, and I realized with a start that they were guarding us, or probably me. I supposed it made sense with all of the strangers on the palace grounds for the fete, but it was still disconcerting, a reminder that there were a lot of people in the world who wanted me dead. The ground surrounding the little palace had been lit up to showcase tableaus of actors and little troops of acrobats performing for wandering guests. Masked musicians strolled the paths. A man with a monkey on his shoulder ambled past, and two men covered from head to toe in gold leaf rode by on zebras, throwing jeweled flowers to everyone they passed. Costumed choirs sang in the trees. A trio of red-headed dancers splashed around in the double eagle fountain, wearing little more than seashells and coral, and holding up platters full of oysters to guests. We had just started to climb the marble steps when a servant appeared with a message for Jenya. She read the note and sighed.
The queen's headache has miraculously disappeared, and she has decided to attend the ball after all.
She gave me a hug, promised to find me before the demonstration, and then slipped away. Spring had barely begun to show itself, but it was impossible to tell that in the grand palace. Music floated down the marble hallways. The air felt curiously warm and was perfumed with the scent of thousands of white flowers grown in Grisha hothouses. They covered tables and trailed down balustrades in thick clusters. Marie, Nadia, and I drifted through groups of nobles, who pretended to ignore us but whispered as we passed by with our corporalki guard. I held my head high and even smiled at one of the young noblemen standing by the entrance to the ballroom. I was surprised to see him blush and look down at his shoes. I glanced at Marie and Nadia to see if they had noticed, but they were gabbling about some of the dishes served to the nobles at dinner. Roasted lynx, salted peaches, burnt swan with saffron. I was glad we'd eaten earlier. The ballroom was larger and grander than even the throne room had been, lit by row after row of sparkling chandeliers and full of masses of people drinking and dancing to the sounds of a masked orchestra seated along the far wall. The gowns, the jewels, the crystals dripping from the chandeliers, even the floor beneath our feet seemed to sparkle, and I wondered how much of it was fabricator craft. The Grisha themselves mingled and danced, but they were easy to pick out in their bold colors, purple, red, and midnight blue, glowing beneath the chandeliers like exotic flowers that had sprung up in some pale garden. The next hour passed in a blur. I was introduced to countless noblemen and their wives, high-ranking military officers, courtiers, and even some Grisha from noble households who had come as guests to the ball. I quickly gave up trying to remember names and simply smiled and nodded and bowed, and tried to keep myself from scanning the crowd for the Darkling's black-clad form.
I also had my first taste of champagne, which I found I liked much better than kvass. At one point, I discovered myself face to face with a tired-looking nobleman, leaning on a cane.
"Duke Karamazov!"
I exclaimed. He was wearing his old officer's uniform, his many medals pinned to his broad chest. The old man looked at me with a flicker of interest, clearly startled that I knew his name.
"It's me," I said. "Alina Starkov."
"Yes, yes, of course," he said with a faint smile.
I looked into his eyes. He didn't remember me at all. And why should he? I was just another orphan, and a very forgettable one at that. Still, I was surprised at how much it hurt. I made polite conversation for as long as I had to, and then took the first opportunity to escape. I leaned against a pillar and grabbed another glass of champagne from a passing servant. The room felt uncomfortably warm. As I looked around, I suddenly felt very alone. I thought of Mal, and for the first time in weeks my heart gave to that old familiar twist. I wished he could be here to see this place. I wished he could see me in my silk kefta with gold in my hair. Mostly, I just wished that he was standing beside me. I pushed the thought away and took a big gulp of champagne. What difference did it make if some drunk old man didn't know me? I was glad he didn't recognize the scrawny, miserable little girl I'd been. I saw Jenya gliding through the crowd toward me. Counts and dukes and wealthy merchants turned to stare at her as she passed, but she ignored them all. "Don't waste your time," I wanted to tell them. "Her heart belongs to a gangly fabricator who doesn't like parties."
"Time for the show.
I mean, the demonstration," she said when she reached me.
"Why are you all by yourself?"
"I just needed to take a little break."
"Too much champagne?"
"Maybe."
"Silly girl," she said, looping her arm through mine. "There's no such thing as too much champagne, though your head will try to tell you otherwise tomorrow."
She steered me through the crowd, gracefully dodging people who wanted to meet me or leer at her, until we made our way behind the stage that had been set up along the far wall of the ballroom. We stood by the orchestra and watched as a man dressed in an elaborate silver ensemble took to the stage to introduce the Grisha. The orchestra struck a dramatic chord, and the guests were soon gasping and applauding as Inferni sent arcs of flame shooting over the crowd, and squalors sent spires of glitter whirling about the room. They were joined by a large group of tide makers who, with the squalor's help, brought a massive wave crashing over the balcony to hover inches above the audience's heads. I saw hands reach up to touch the shining sheet of water. Then the Inferni raised their arms, and with a hiss, the wave exploded into a swirling mass of mist. Hidden by the side of the stage, I had a sudden inspiration and sent light cascading through the mist, creating a rainbow that shimmered briefly in the air.
"Alina."
I jumped. The light faltered, and the rainbow disappeared. The darkling was standing beside me. As usual, he wore a black kefta, though this one was made of raw silk and velvet. The candlelight gleamed off his dark hair. I swallowed and glanced around, but Jenya had disappeared. "Hello," I managed.
"Are you ready?"
I nodded, and he led me to the base of the steps leaning to the platform. As the crowd applauded and the Grisha left the stage, Ivo punched my arm.
"Nice touch, Alina. That rainbow was perfect."
I thanked him and then turned my attention to the crowd, feeling suddenly nervous. I saw eager faces, the queen surrounded by her ladies looking bored. Beside her, the king swayed on his throne, clearly well in his cups, the apparat at his side. If the royal princes had bothered to show up, they were nowhere to be seen. With a start, I realized the apparat was staring directly at me, and I looked quickly away. We waited as the orchestra began to play an ominous, escalating thrum, and the man in silver bounded onto the stage once again to introduce us. Suddenly Ivan was beside us, saying something in the darkling's ear. I heard the darkling reply,
"Take them to the war room. I'll be there shortly." Ivan darted away, ignoring me completely. When the Darkling turned to me, he was smiling, his eyes alive with excitement. Whatever news he'd gotten had been good. A burst of applause signaled that it was time for us to take the stage. He took my arm and said,
"Let's give the people what they want."
I nodded, my throat dry, as he led me up the steps into the center of the stage. I heard eager buzzing from the crowd, looked out at their expectant faces. The Darkling gave me a short nod. With a little preamble, he slammed his hands together, and thunder boomed through the room as a wave of darkness fell over the party. He waited, letting the crowd's anticipation grow. The Darkling might not have liked the Grisha performing, but he certainly knew how to put on a show. Only when the room was practically vibrating with tension did he lean into me and whisper so softly that only I could hear.
"Now."
Heart clattering, I extended my arm, palm up. I took a deep breath and called up that feeling of surety, the feeling of light rushing toward me and through me, and focused it in my hand. A bright column of light shot upward from my palm, gleaming in the darkness of the ballroom. The crowd gasped, and I heard someone shout,
"It's Drew!"
I turned my hand slightly, angling toward what I hoped was the right spot on the balcony that David had described to me earlier.
"Just make sure you aim high enough, and we'll find you," he said.
I knew I'd gotten it right when the beam from my palm shot out from the balcony, zigging and zagging across the room as the light bounced from one large fabricator-made mirror to the next, until the dark ballroom was a pattern of crisscrossing streams of gleaming sunlight. The crowd murmured in excitement. I closed my palm and the beam disappeared. Then in a flash, I let the light bloom around me and the Darkling, wrapping us in a glowing sphere that surrounded us like a flowing golden halo. He looked at me and held out his hand, sending black ribbons of darkness climbing through the sphere, twisting and turning. I grew the light wider and brighter, feeling the pleasure of the power move through me, letting it play through my fingertips as he sent inky tendrils of darkness shooting through the light, making them dance. The crowd applauded, and the Darkling murmured softly,
"Now, show them."
I grinned, and did as I had been taught, throwing my arms wide and feeling my whole self open. Then I slammed my hands together, and a loud rumble shook the ballroom. Brilliant white light exploded through the crowd with a whoosh as the guests released a collective, "Ah," and closed their eyes, flinging up their hands against the brightness. I held it for a few long seconds, and then unclasped my hands, letting the light fade. The crowd burst into wild applause, clapping furiously and stomping their feet. We took our bows as the orchestra began to play, and the applause gave way to excited chatter. The Darkling pulled me to the side of the stage and whispered,
"Do you hear them? See them dancing and embracing? They know now that the rumors are true, that everything is about to change."
My elation ebbed slightly as I felt uncertainty creep in. "But aren't we giving these people false hope?" I asked.
"No, Alina. I told you that you were my answer, and you are."
"But after what happened by the lake?"
I blushed furiously and hurried to clarify. "I mean, you said I wasn't strong enough."
The Darkling's mouth quirked in the suggestion of a grin, but his eyes were serious.
"Did you really think I was done with you?"
A little tremor quaked through me. He watched me, his half-smile fading. Then abruptly, he took me by the arm and pulled me from the stage into the crowd. People offered us their congratulations, reached their hands out to touch us, but he cast a rippling pool of darkness that snaked through the crowd and vanished as soon as we had passed. It was almost like being invisible. I could hear snatches of conversation as we slipped between groups of people.
"I don't believe it. A miracle."
"Never trusted him, but..."
"It's over. It's over."
I heard people laughing and crying. That feeling of disquiet twisted through me again. These people believed that I could save them. What would they think when they learned I was good for nothing but parlor tricks? But these thoughts were only dim flickers. It was hard to think of anything but the fact that, after weeks of ignoring me, the Darkling had hold of my hand and was pulling me through a narrow door and down an empty corridor. A giddy laugh escaped me as we slipped inside an empty room lit only by the moonlight pouring in through the windows. I barely had time to register that it was the sitting room where I had once been brought to meet the Queen. Because as soon as the door closed, he was kissing me, and I could think of nothing else. I'd been kissed before. Drunken mistakes, awkward fumblings. This was nothing like that. It was sure and powerful, and like my whole body had just come awake. I could feel my pounding heart, the press of silk against my skin, the strength of his arms around me, one hand buried deep in my hair, the other at my back, pulling me closer. The moment his lips met mine, the connection between us opened, and I felt his power flood through me. I could feel how much he wanted me. But behind that desire, I could feel something else, something that felt like anger. I drew back, startled. You don't want to be doing this. This is the only thing I want to be doing, he growled, and I could hear the bitterness and desire all tangled up in his voice. And you hate that, I said with a sudden flash of comprehension. He sighed and leaned against me, brushing my hair back from my neck. Maybe I do, he murmured, his lips grazing my ear, my throat, my collarbone. I shivered, letting my head fall back, but I had to ask, why? Why? He repeated, his lips still brushing over my skin, his fingers sliding over the ribbons at my neckline. Alina, do you know what Ivan told me before we took the stage? Tonight, we received word that my men have spotted Muratsova's herd. The key to the Shadow Fold is finally within our grasp. And right now, I should be in the war room, hearing their report. I should be planning our trip north. But I'm not, am I? My mind had shut down, given itself over to the pleasure coursing through me and the anticipation of where his next kiss would land. Am I? He repeated, and he nipped at my neck. I gasped and shook my head, unable to think. He had me pushed up against the door now, his hips hard against mine. The problem with wanting, he whispered, his mouth trailing along my jaw until it hovered over my lips, is that it makes us weak. And then, at last, when I thought I couldn't bear it any longer, he brought his mouth down on mine. His kiss was harder this time, laced with the anger I could feel lingering inside him. I didn't care. I didn't care that he ignored me or that he confused me or about any of Jenya's vague warnings. He'd found the stag. He'd been right about me. He'd been right about everything. His hand slid down to my hip. I felt a little thrill of panic as my skirt slid higher and his fingers closed on my bare thigh, but instead of pulling away, I pushed closer to him. I don't know what might have happened next. At that moment, we heard a loud clamor of voices from the hallway. A group of very noisy, very drunk people were careening down the corridor, and someone bumped heavily into the door, rattling the handle. We froze. The Darkling shoved his shoulder against the door so that it wouldn't open, and the group moved on, shouting and laughing. In the silence that followed, we stared at each other. Then he sighed and dropped his hand, letting the silk of my skirts fall back into place. I should go, he murmured. Ivan and the others are waiting for me. I nodded, not trusting myself to speak. He stepped away from me. I moved aside and he opened the door a crack, glancing down the hallway to make sure it was empty. I won't return to the party, he said. But you should, at least for a while. I nodded again. I was suddenly acutely aware of the fact that I was standing in a dark room with a near stranger and that only moments before I'd nearly had my skirts around my waist. Anakuya's stern face appeared in my mind, lecturing me about the foolish mistakes of peasant girls, and I flushed with embarrassment. The darkling slipped through the doorway, but then he turned back to me. Alina, he said, and I could see that he was fighting with himself. Can I come to you tonight? I hesitated. I knew that if I said yes, there would be no turning back. My skin still burned where he'd touched me, but the excitement of the moment was melting away, and a bit of sense was returning. I wasn't sure of what I wanted. I wasn't sure of anything anymore. I waited too long. We heard more voices coming down the hall. The darkling pulled the door shut, striding out into the hallway as I stepped back into the darkness. I waited nervously, trying to think of an excuse for why I might be hiding in an empty room. The voices passed, and I let out a long, shuddering breath. I hadn't had a chance to say yes or no to the darkling. Would he come anyway? Did I want him to? My mind was worrying. I had to set myself to rights and get back to the party. The darkling could just disappear, but I didn't have that luxury. I peeked out into the corridor and then hurried back to the ballroom, stopping to check my appearance in one of the gilt mirrors. It wasn't as bad as I'd feared. My cheeks were flushed, my lips a bit bruised looking. But there was nothing I could do about that. I smoothed my hair and straightened my kefta. As I was about to enter the ballroom, I heard a door open at the other end of the hallway. The apparat was hurrying toward me, his brown robes flapping behind him. Oh, please, not now. Alina, he called. I have to get back to the ball, I said cheerily, and turned away from him. I must speak with you. Things are moving far more quickly than... I slipped back into the party with what I hoped was a serene expression. Almost instantly, I was surrounded by nobles hoping to meet me and congratulate me on the demonstration. Sergei hurried over to me with my other Heartrender guards, murmuring apologies for losing me in the crowd. Glancing over my shoulder, I was relieved to see the apparat's ragged form swallowed by a tide of partygoers. I did my best to make polite conversation and to answer the questions that the guests asked. One woman had tears in her eyes and asked me to bless her. I had no idea what to do, so I patted her hand in what I hoped was a reassuring manner. All I wanted was to be alone to think, to sort through the confused mess of emotions in my head. The champagne wasn't helping. As one group of guests moved off to be replaced by another, I recognized the long, melancholy face of the Korporalnik, who had ridden with me and Ivan in the Darkling's coach and helped to fight off the Fjärden assassins. I scrambled to remember his name. He came to my rescue, bowing deeply and saying, Fedor Kaminsky. Forgive me, I said. It's been a long night. I can only imagine. I hope not, I thought, with a twinge of embarrassment. It seems the Darkling was right, after all, he said with a smile. Pardon? I squeaked. We were so certain that you couldn't possibly be Grisha. I returned his grin. I try to make a habit of getting things hopelessly wrong. Fedor barely had time to tell me of his new assignment near the southern border before he was swept away by another wave of impatient guests, waiting to get their moment with the Sun Summoner. I hadn't even thanked him for protecting my life that day in the glen. I managed to keep talking and smiling for about an hour, but as soon as I had a free moment, I told my guards that I wanted to leave and made a beeline for the doors. The instant I was outside, I felt better. The night air was blessedly cold, the stars bright in the sky. I took a deep breath. I felt giddy and exhausted, and my thoughts seemed to keep bouncing from excitement to anxiety and back again. If the Darkling came to my room tonight, what would it mean?
The idea of being his sent a little jolt through me. I didn't think he was in love with me, and I had no idea what I felt for him, but he wanted me, and maybe that was enough. I shook my head, trying to make sense of everything. The Darkling's men had found the stag. I should be thinking about that, about my destiny, about the fact that I would have to kill an ancient creature, about the power it would give me and the responsibility of that. But all I could think about was his hands on my hips, his lips on my neck, the lean, hard feel of him in the dark. I took another deep breath of night air. The sensible thing would be to lock my door and go to sleep. But I wasn't sure I wanted to be sensible. When we arrived at the little palace, Sergei and the others left me to return to the ball. The domed hall was silent, the fires in its tile ovens banked, its lamps glowing low and golden. Just as I was about to pass through the doorway to the main staircase, the carved doors behind the Darkling's table opened. Hurriedly, I stepped into the shadows. I didn't want the Darkling to know I'd left the party early, and I wasn't ready to see him yet anyway. But it was just a group of soldiers crossing through the entry hall on their way out of the little palace. I wondered if they were the men who had come to report on the location of the stag. As the light from one of the lamps fell on the last soldier of the group, my heart nearly stopped. Mal! When he turned around, I thought I might dissolve from happiness at the sight of his familiar face. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I registered his grim expression, but it was lost in the sheer joy I felt. I sprinted across the hall and threw my arms around him, nearly knocking him off his feet. He steadied himself and then pulled my arms from around his neck as he glanced at the other soldiers who had stopped to watch us. I knew I'd probably embarrassed him, but I just didn't care. I was bouncing on the balls of my feet, practically dancing with happiness. "Go on," he said to them. "I'll catch up to you." A few eyebrows were raised, but the soldiers disappeared through the main entrance, leaving us alone. I opened my mouth to speak, but I wasn't sure where to begin, so I settled for the first thing that came to mind. "What are you doing here?"
"Hell if I know," Mal said with a weariness that surprised me. "I had a report to make to your master."
"My... what?"
Then it hit me, and I broke into a huge grin.
"You're the one who found Morozova's herd. I should have known."
He didn't return my smile. He didn't even meet my eyes. He just looked away and said, "I should go." I stared at him in disbelief, my elation withering. So I'd been right. Mal was done with me. All the anger and embarrassment I'd felt over the last few months crashed in on me.
"Sorry," I said coldly. "I didn't realize I was wasting your time."
"I didn't say that."
"No, no, I understand. You can't be bothered to answer my letters. Why would you want to stand here talking to me while your real friends are waiting?"
He frowned. "I didn't get any letters."
"Right," I said angrily. He sighed and rubbed a hand over his face. "We have to move constantly to track the herd. My unit is barely in contact with the regiment anymore."
There was such weariness in his voice. For the first time I looked at him, really looked at him, and saw how much he had changed. There were shadows beneath his blue eyes. A jagged scar ran along the line of his unshaven jaw. He was still Mal, but there was something harder about him, something cold and unfamiliar. "You didn't get any of my letters?" He shook his head, still wearing that same distant expression. I didn't know what to think. Mal had never lied to me before, and for all my anger, I didn't think he was lying to me now. I hesitated.
"Mal, can't you stay a little while longer?" I heard the pleading in my voice. I hated it, but I hated the thought of him leaving even more. "You can't imagine what it's been like here."
He gave a rough bark of laughter. "I don't need to imagine.
I saw your little demonstration in the ballroom. Very impressive.
You saw me?
That's right, he said harshly. Do you know how worried I've been about you? No one knew what had happened to you, what they'd done to you. There was no way to reach you. There were even rumors that you were being tortured. When the captain needed men to report back to the Darkling, like an idiot, I made the trek down here just on the chance that I would find you.
Really?
That was hard for me to believe. I'd gotten so used to the idea of Mal's indifference. Yes, he hissed. And here you are, safe and sound, dancing and flirting like some cosseted little princess.
Don't sound so disappointed, I snapped. I'm sure the Darkling can arrange for a rack or some hot coals if that would make you feel better.
Mal scowled and stepped away from me. Tears of frustration pricked my eyes.
Why were we fighting?
Desperately, I reached out to lay a hand on his arm. His muscles tensed, but he didn't pull away.
Mal, I can't help the way things are here. I didn't ask for any of this.
He looked at me and then looked away. I felt some of the tension go out of him. Finally, he said, I know you didn't. Again, I heard that terrible weariness in his voice.
What happened to you, Mal?
I whispered. He said nothing, just stared into the darkness of the hall. I raised my hand and rested it on his stubbly cheek, gently turning his face to mine.
Tell me.
He closed his eyes.
I can't.
I let my fingertips trail over the raised skin of the scar on his jaw.
Jenya could fix this. She can...
Instantly, I knew I'd said the wrong thing. His eyes flew open. I don't need fixing, he snapped.
I didn't mean...
He snatched my hand from his face, holding it tightly, his blue eyes searching mine.
Are you happy here, Alina?
The question took me by surprise.
I don't know. Sometimes...
Are you happy here with him?
I didn't have to ask who Mal meant. I opened my mouth to answer, but I had no idea what to say.
You're wearing his symbol, he observed,
his glance flicking to the little gold charm hanging at my neckline.
His symbol and his color.
They're just clothes.
Mal's lips twisted in a cynical smile, a smile so different from the one I knew and loved that I almost flinched.
You don't really believe that.
What difference does it make what I wear?
The clothes, the jewels, even the way you look. He's all over you.
The words hit me like a slap. In the dark of the hall, I felt an ugly flush creeping up my cheeks. I snatched my hand from his, crossing my arms over my chest.
It's not like that, I whispered,
but I didn't meet his gaze. It was as if Mal could see right through me, as if he could pluck every fevered thought I'd ever had of the Darkling right out of my head. But on the heels of that shame came anger. So what if he did know? What right did he have to judge me? How many girls had Mal held in the dark?
I saw how he looked at you, he said.
I like how he looks at me, I practically shouted. He shook his head, that bitter smile still playing on his lips. I wanted to smack it right off his face.
Just admit it, he sneered. He owns you.
He owns you too, Mal, I lashed back. He owns us all. That wiped away his smile.
No, he doesn't, Mal said fiercely. Not me. Not ever.
Oh, really? Don't you have some place to be, Mal? Don't you have orders to follow?
Mal stood up straight, his face cold.
Yes, he said. Yes, I do.
He turned sharply and walked out the door. For a moment, I stood there quivering with anger, and then I ran to the doorway. I got all the way down the steps before I stopped myself. The tears that had been threatening to overflow finally did, coursing down my cheeks.
I wanted to run after him, to take back what I'd said, to beg him to stay. But I'd spent my life running after Mal. Instead, I stood in silence and let him go. Chapter 15. Only when I was in my room, the door closed securely behind me, did I let my sobs overtake me. I slid to the floor, my back pressed against the bed, my arms around my knees, trying to hold myself together. By now, Mal would be leaving the palace, traveling back to Tsubeya to join the other trackers hunting Morozova's herd. The distance widening between us felt like a palpable thing. I felt further from him than I had in all the lonely months that had gone before. I rubbed my thumb over the scar on my palm. "Come back," I whispered, my body shaking with fresh sobs. "Come back." But he wouldn't. I'd as good as ordered him to leave. I knew I would probably never see him again, and I ached with it. I don't know how long I sat there in the dark. At some point, I became aware of a soft knocking at my door. I sat up straight, trying to stifle my sniffing. What if it was the Darkling? I couldn't bear to see him now, to explain my tears to him. But I had to do something. I dragged myself to my feet and opened the door. A bony hand snaked around my wrist, seizing me in an iron grip. "Bakra?" I asked, peering at the woman standing at my door. "Come," she said, pulling my arm and glancing over her shoulder. "Leave me alone, Bakra." I tried to pull away from her, but she was surprisingly strong. "You come with me now, girl," she bit out. "Now!" Maybe it was the intensity of her gaze, or the shock of seeing fear in her eyes, or maybe I was just used to doing what Bakra said, but I followed her out the door. She closed it behind us, keeping hold of my wrist. "What is this? Where are we going?" "Quiet!" Instead of turning right and heading toward the main staircase, she dragged me in the opposite direction to the other end of the hall. She pressed a panel in the wall, and a hidden door swung open. She gave me a shove. I didn't have the will to fight her, so I stumbled down the narrow spiral staircase. Every time I looked back at her, she gave me another little push. When we reached the bottom of the stairs, Bakra stepped in front of me and led me down a cramped hallway with bare stone floors and plain wooden walls. It looked almost naked compared to the rest of the little palace, and I thought we might be in the servants' quarters. Bakra grabbed hold of my wrist again and tugged me into a dark, empty chamber. She lit a single candle, locked and bolted the door, then crossed the room and reached up on her tiptoes to draw closed the curtain on the tiny basement window. The room was sparsely furnished with a narrow bed, a simple chair, and a wash basin. "Here," she said, shoving a pile of clothes at me. "Put these on." "I'm too tired for lessons, Bakra." "No more lessons. You must leave this place. Tonight." I blinked. "What are you talking about?" "I'm trying to keep you from spending the rest of your life as a slave. Now get changed."
"Bakra, what's going on?
Why did you bring me down here?"
"We don't have much time. The Darkling is close to finding Morozova's herd. Soon you will have the stag."
"I know," I said, thinking of Mal. My heart ached, but I also couldn't resist feeling a little smug. "I thought you didn't believe in Morozova's stag." She waved her arm as if brushing away my words.
"That's what I told him. I hoped that he might give up the stag's pursuit if he thought it was nothing but a peasant tale. But once he has it, nothing will be able to stop him."
I threw up my hands in exasperation.
"Stop him from doing what?" "Using the fold as a weapon."
"I see," I said. "Does he also plan to build a summer home there?"
Bakra seized hold of my arm. "This isn't a joke."
There was a desperate, unfamiliar edge to her voice, and her grip on my arm was nearly painful. What was wrong with her?
"Bakra, maybe we should go to the infirmary."
"I'm not sick, and I'm not insane," she spat. "You must listen to me."
"Then talk sense," I said. "How could anyone use the shadow fold as a weapon?" She leaned into me, her fingers digging into my flesh.
by expanding it.
Right, I said slowly, trying to extricate myself from her grasp.
The land that the Unsea covers was once green and good, fertile and rich. Now it is dead and barren, crawling with abominations. The Darkling will push its boundaries north to Fjerda, south to Shuhan. Those who do not bow to him will see their kingdoms turn to desolate wasteland, and their people devoured by ravening Volkra.
I gaped at her in horror, shocked by the images she had conjured. The old woman had clearly lost her mind.
Bagra, I said gently, I think you have some kind of fever,
or you've gone completely senile.
Finding the stag is a good thing. It means I can help the Darkling destroy the fold.
No,
she cried, and it was almost a howl.
He never intended to destroy it. The fold is his creation.
I sighed. Why had Bagra picked tonight to lose all touch with reality?
The fold was created hundreds of years ago by the Black Heretic. The Darkling...
He is the Black Heretic,
she said furiously, her face mere inches from mine.
Of course he is. With some effort, I pried her fingers loose and stepped past her to the door. I'm going to find you a healer, and then I'm going to bed.
Look at me, girl.
I took a deep breath and turned around, my patience at an end. I felt sorry for her, but this was just too much.
Bagra.
The words died on my lips. Darkness was pooling in Bagra's palms, the skeins of inky blackness floating into the air.
You do not know him, Alina.
It was the first time she had ever used my name.
But I do.
I stood there watching dark spirals unfurl around her, trying to comprehend what I was seeing. Searching Bagra's strange features, I saw the explanation clearly written there. I saw the ghost of what must have once been a beautiful woman who gave birth to a beautiful son.
You're his mother, I whispered numbly.
She nodded.
I am not mad. I am the only person who knows what he truly is, what he truly intends. And I am telling you that you must run.
The Darkling had claimed he didn't know what Bagra's power was. Had he lied to me? I shook my head, trying to clear my thoughts, trying to make sense of what Bagra was telling me.
It's not possible, I said. The Black Heretic lived hundreds of years ago.
He has served countless kings, faked countless deaths, bided his time, waiting for you. Once he takes control of the fold, no one will be able to stand against him.
A shiver went through me.
No,
I said. He told me the fold was a mistake. He called the Black Heretic evil.
The fold was no mistake.
Bagra dropped her hands and the swirling darkness around her melted away.
The only mistake was the Volkra.
He did not anticipate them. Did not think to wonder what power of that magnitude might do to mere men. My stomach turned. The Volkra were men?
Oh, yes. Generations ago. Farmers and their wives, their children. I warned him that there would be a price, but he didn't listen. He was blinded by his hunger for power. Just as he is blinded now.
You're wrong, I said, rubbing my arms, trying to shake the bone-deep cold stealing through me.
You're lying. Only the Volkra have kept the Darkling from using the fold against his enemies. They are his punishment, a living testimony to his arrogance. But you will change that. The monsters cannot abide sunlight once the Darkling has used your power to subdue the Volkra. He will be able to enter the fold safely. He will finally have what he wants. There will be no limit to his power.
I shook my head. He wouldn't do that. He would never do that. I remembered the night he'd spoken to me by the fire in the broken-down barn.
the shame and sorrow in his voice. I've spent my life searching for a way to make things right. You're the first glimmer of hope I've had in a long time.
He said he wants to make Ravka whole again. He said that... Stop telling me what he said, she snarled. He is ancient. He's had plenty of time to master lying to a lonely, naive girl.
She advanced on me, her black eyes burning.
Think, Alina. If Ravka is made whole, the Second Army will no longer be vital to its survival. The Darkling will be nothing but another servant of the King. Is that his dream of the future?
I was starting to shake.
Please stop. But with the Fold in his power, he will spread destruction before him. He will lay waste to the world, and he will never have to kneel to another king again. No. All because of you. No, I shouted at her. I wouldn't do that. Even if what you're saying is true, I would never help him do that. You won't have a choice. The stag's power belongs to whoever slays it.
But he can't use an amplifier, I protested weakly.
He can use you, Bagra said softly. Morozova's stag is no ordinary amplifier. He will hunt it. He will kill it. He will take its antlers, and once he places them around your neck, you will belong to him completely. You will be the most powerful Grisha who has ever lived, and all that newfound power will be his to command. You will be bound to him forever, and you will be powerless to resist.
It was the pity in her voice that undid me. Pity from the woman who'd never allowed me a moment's weakness, a moment's rest. My legs gave way and I slid to the floor. I covered my head with my hands, trying to block out Bagra's voice, but I couldn't stop the Darkling's words from echoing through my mind. We all serve someone. The king is a child. You and I are going to change the world. He had lied to me about Bagra. He had lied about the black heretic. Had he lied about the stag, too? I'm asking you to trust me. Bagra had begged him to give me another amplifier, but he'd insisted it had to be the stag's antlers. A necklace, no, a collar of bone. And when I'd pushed him, he'd kissed me, and I'd forgotten all about the stag and amplifiers and everything else. I remembered his perfect face in the lamplight, his stunned expression, his rumpled hair. Had it all been deliberate? The kiss by the lakeshore, the flash of hurt that had played across his face that night in the barn? Every human gesture, every whispered confidence, even what had happened between us tonight? I cringed at the thought. I could still feel his warm breath on my neck, hear his whisper in my ear. The problem with wanting is that it makes us weak. How right he was. I wanted so badly to belong somewhere, anywhere. I'd been so eager to please him, so proud to keep his secrets, but I'd never bothered to question what he might really want, what his true motives might be. I'd been too busy imagining myself by his side, the savior of Ravka, most treasured, most desired, like some kind of queen. I'd made it so easy for him. You and I are going to change the world. Just wait. Put on your pretty clothes and wait for the next kiss, the next kind word. Wait for the stag, wait for the collar, wait to be made into a murderer and a slave. He had warned me that the age of Grisha power was coming to an end. I should have known he would never let that happen. I took a shaky breath and tried to still my trembling. I thought of poor Alexei and all the others who had been left to die in the black reaches of the Fold. I thought of the ashen sands that had once been soft brown earth. I thought of the Volgra, the first victims of the black heretic's greed. Did you really think I was done with you? The Darkling wanted to use me. He wanted to take away the one thing that had ever really belonged to me, the only power I'd ever had. I got to my feet. I wasn't going to make it easy for him anymore. All right, I said, reaching for the pile of clothes Bagra had brought me. What do I do?